Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on the 14th of September, 2021. It's nice to have you here today. It's a beautiful day here in New England, where my guest is as well. He's down in Rhode Island. I'm in Maine. That's Jay Littman, who's back here, one of my favorite returning guests, a partner in the major architectural firm, School Design, etc., Fielding International. And Jay's going to talk to us about what he calls the rise of the fourth generation school. And we're going to talk about what he means for that. And let me just say, I did a show yesterday with Fielding as well, okay, how they redesigned the structure of learning down in Albemarle County, Virginia, which is the Charlottesville area. And this is the way they look at it. They're rethinking education out of the structural box. All right, I think we're going to get into that in a great deal of detail with Jay Littman today in just a couple of seconds. We're going to archive this show over at ace-ed.org. That's the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, ACE-ED.org. Go over there. You'll enjoy our magazine, Equity in Access, as so many thousands of educators already do. I hope you're one of them. All the information about equity, and I'm happy to announce that over the next week or so, we can go over and take a look, but we're opening our new website all about social-emotional learning and equity, which is called SEL Today, seltoday.org, and you're welcome to go over there and take a look with the understanding that we're still tweaking it a little bit, etc. But it's a nice-looking website. You'll enjoy it if you go over there, seltoday.org. Okay, without further ado, let me bring on my good friend, who I shall call by his new title, Pop-Pop. You're a grandfather, right, Pop-Pop?
I am a grandfather, yes. How are you doing?
Is he cool? I'm good. How are you, Joey? You must be on the cloud nine, man. Grandpop.
I am.
Yeah.
I've waited for this my whole life, I think.
Well,
so.
Obviously, and what is that? I assume the child's name is Little Larry. Is that correct?
Henry Simon Littman.
You know, I tell you, the older type names, like Henry, okay? I have a nephew named Henry, and his brother is Charles, okay? And those names are catching on these days.
Yeah.
I love it.
Audrey,
okay?
Sophie, they're all coming back.
Yeah, they're all coming back. Exactly right. And so how come they didn't name him Larry? I still don't understand that.
That'll be the next one.
Oh, good, good. By the way, the name works well for both a boy and a girl. So just so you know that, I just want to remind you.
Okay.
Yeah, you can see that, Jay. You can see.
I'll tell my son that.
tell everybody, you can do a better job just before we get into your thoughts about what you do and what Fielding International does. And I hope I did a pretty good job of describing it. You know, we had Isaac on yesterday, okay, talking about Albemarle County, Virginia schools. That was a great show. I hope you listened to it. And I did send it to you, by the way. Yeah. And just talk about Fielding International, the way you guys rethink stuff. Go ahead. Describe it all.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, as a summary, I mean, so we're an international practice. Isaac actually is based out of Singapore these days. That's where he was calling in from.
Yes, I know.
And our practice
We had some jokes about that.
Yeah, there's a big time gap there. But our practice is focused solely in the design of schools that support new pedagogical strategies that basically equip kids for the emerging 21st century world, which we'll talk more about. We've been at it for about 15 years now, so this is not flash in the pan. And, you know, our work has been widely published. Your magazine
is
published.
It is worldwide. Yep. Yeah.
I mean, our Rhode Island studio alone is working in Spain, Russia, and all over the United States. Immediately right now, we're shortlisted for jobs in many more countries once COVID lifts.
But
we do have four studios here in the U.S., and Isaac's in Singapore, as we said. He's working on a $400 million reconstruction and expansion of the Singapore American School, which is a huge project.
Wow.
But I think what makes us different is we're a highly integrated team of architects, planners, designers, and educators, as you well know from, you know, Jill Akers and Nathan Strange, and many, many more people in our firm, we integrate educators into our design process. They work with us hand in hand as we design schools. So we're looking at all the issues at once, everything from acoustics and lighting to the pedagogy, how teachers are being retrained, and, you know, making spaces that are socially and emotional stable and supportive. And I think when it comes down to it, we dedicate our goal to designing new kinds of schools where students thrive. That's the key. But that's all we do with schools.
You really do. And, you know, I'm just going to change a little bit of what you said, if I may. You are really looking, and yesterday's show was a good example of this. You're redesigning learning. Okay, when we say schools, you're redesigning learning environments. Okay, and as an example, just yesterday that we were doing the show about various centers of learning for the Albemarle County schools. In other words, we're not just talking about a school building here; we're talking about learning environments. And I think that's what you guys do, and you do so well. By the way, the reason I'm so smart about all this is because I talk to you guys a lot, all right? And so I know this stuff, all right? But it goes beyond school. Let me put it this way. It goes beyond the word school when we think of the structure of school. We're talking really about the structure of learning, and I think it's really great stuff, and I think it's important. And you mentioned this, Jay. The world is changing. And it's changed before. You called this, and I got it when you were talking about the rise of the fourth-generation school. Why don't you just go into why you titled it that? What's that mean to you?
Well, it's a phrase that's being used more and more in the last couple of years. There have been four major industrial revolutions, you know, in our civilization, and we're now entering the fourth one. And, you know, if you want to go through them quickly – the first industrial revolution is like around 1760s, and that's when steam power came in and the first mechanization for production happened, which meant that cloth could be mass-produced, wood could be cut to size. Everything was still handmade, but all the raw materials became more codified in how they were built. And that lasted until about 1870, and I think everybody understands, you know, their own history. The second one, we use more compact fuels to power steam, and then also the rise of electricity and refining mass production. The thing that people always forget, of course, is that our own Civil War helped push that industrial revolution forward with Eli Whitney started to develop interchangeable parts for guns, and immediately that exploded through all of society, because before that, everybody made things by hand at home, and even if they were in factories, mass production was kept at a minimum. It was not synonymous with quality. With interchangeable parts, it was. And that exploded production in the world. And that kept going. And, you know, over time, you know, electronics started coming in. Well, electricity came in, telephone, telegraph, and then radio and television. And that really was the same industrial revolution, doing things the same way, mass production in factories, until the third one, which we all know, our generation, which was the digital revolution starting around 1969. And really, I mean, my entire adult life and yours too, and everyone who's, you know, in their 50s and 60s and 70s saw the massive changes that happened in every field. You know, the production of Mylar for drawing as architects, gone, because we draw on screens. All the little bags of pounce and the spirals, all those industries disappeared overnight. And all these new industries multiplied around it to support, you know, now we work on screens in virtual Revit models that we can share with each other across huge fields of disciplines. But that whole digital revolution really came to its penultimate, you know, peak with the rise of the internet, which made an explosion of knowledge acquisition and commerce like Amazon and other, you know, online buying. And that's leading us to starting in around 1915, I think everybody's 2015, sorry, everybody started thinking more about this fourth industrial revolution. And I think it's been written about extensively now, you know, and that is where there's, you know, a profound shift where, you know, you might want to call it the advent of cyber physical systems. So, you know, new capabilities for people and machines, these, you know, they're basically relying on technologies and infrastructure from the third revolution, but the fourth revolution really represents new ways technology becomes fused with societies and even human bodies. I mean, I could use a good example is, you know, the advancement of my younger son's hearing aids, which were like a box in his chest when he was a baby, to something so tiny behind his ear now that can actually measure the frequency ranges in a room and boost the intelligibility. So almost like microprocessing powers. But other examples are like new forms of genomic editing. That's the fourth revolution. New forms of machine intelligence. Like we have a little vacuum that runs through our house and knows the entire map of the house and where to go. I mean,
and
there's
more
robotics coming.
And it does not pick up dog poop. It rolls around dog poop. That's the newest part of Roomba. Did you know this? Is it true?
Yes, I know. Because
it now has a sensor so it doesn't roll over any dog poop.
That's right. But, I mean,
there you go. It's a brand new thing.
I
just
examples.
Read about it.
You know, and then, you know, I mean, I don't know how many of the readers know about blockchain. I mean, blockchain is a new way to check on the veracity of information, and you can actually track an apple all the way back to, you know, where it was grown and what fertilizer was put in the field. You can do almost anything. So cryptographic intelligence is now coming as well. But, I mean, it goes beyond that because it creates a whole new field of jobs. And I last night started to make a list of just some of these things that people don't even know about. You want to say?
No, you go. Go ahead. Keep going. I'm agreeing with you. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, but I just started making a list of the things that are already happening now, and they represent the fourth industrial revolution. And the haptics, I think I mentioned on your show before, which most people don't even know what it is, but if anybody watched Ready Player One, where, you know...
I love that movie.
The kid wears the suit and he gets punched in cyberspace. The suit grabs him and gives him an impact right where he got hit in space. If he's getting, you know, hit with a torch, the suit heats up. Well, you already have that. You already have it because if you play video games, there are, you know, game consoles that if you hit something or something explodes, it shakes. If you, you can actually program your phone. So you have a calculator. When you push a button on it, you get a tiny vibration on the phone. Tesla is really good at this. They can control the way the car feels in its suspension. So you can make the car feel like the way an Audi grabs the road or the way a Lexus floats over the road. So there's all these things that are happening. So basically it's called enhanced virtual sensation. That's what happens. But it takes right. So that's an example. I mean, obviously there's whole new fields. Just the mRNA vaccines we're taking now for COVID are based on a whole new field of genomic editing and manipulating RNA. I mean, something that you can't even see. You know, the augmented reality is coming rapidly now. I think I read that Facebook is starting to work on special glasses that do it. And what that is
they are.
When you walk
they
down,
are.
Yeah. So if you're in an operating room and you're going to operate on a heart, your body's been scanned, it's all been synchronized. So when the doctor starts to move to replace your valve, God forbid you should do it.
Yes.
But if you did, he can look through his glasses right through your chest exactly where your heart is because everyone is an imperfect copy of each other. So you kind of know where the heart is, but it's not the same for everyone. It can be millimeters different. This eliminates all of that. And so, I mean, self-driving cars is a whole new industry. Battery technologies, smart paint, where the paint changes color and changes stiffness. That's out there now. You know, biomechanical engineering for people that have artificial limbs. All these things, and what they're doing, which is really amazing, is they are creating a new kind of world where kids have to know more than knowledge. They have to know more than knowledge. They have to be able to develop kind of different kinds of abilities, so they're actually having to learn how to learn and relearn. They have to be able to know how to reinvent themselves. Those are things that were never taught in schools. So schools.
That's a good point. And really, what you're saying, kids today have to be futurists. You can't take the status quo. Okay, that's what we did for years. okay? We taught the status quo. And if you look, when you and I, we were both from Philadelphia, when you and I went to school, the dream was to get a job at General Motors, if I may, okay, and work there for the next 55 years.
The Bud plant.
Yeah.
People
yeah,
in Frankfurt
exactly.
High wanted to go work at the Bud plant. Yeah,
which
by the way, for
or make
for
scrapple
our listeners,
or whatever the case may
right.
be. But you get, yeah,
well,
you
Bud,
get my point.
Bud made Subway cars all over the country.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you meant
Budweiser.
I thought you meant Budweiser. Thank you. I didn't know what you were
Bud.
Talking
no,
about.
No, the Bud.
B
U D D. The
course,
Bud plant down at Huntington Park Avenue.
I remember.
But I mean,
here's
the thing, schools. We always, you know, we call them the Sells and Bells model. You know, they're 900 square foot classrooms that you're putting in as a teacher for the next 30 years of your career, and you wind up teaching kids to do something. You prepare people to take on the tasks or a job. They're disciplined to do something, but that's it. That's what you learn to do, and that's what you're going to do. You know, you went into industrial arts. In
right.
Northeast High or, in anywhere you went and you were learning how to run machines to work at SKF or, you know, learn how to type so you can work as an accountant and learn some bookkeeping that you could do, you know, put describe things in a book, which, of course, nobody does now. And as we move further into the future, you know, education will need to support children. And that is now, by the way, education needs to support children now to develop that skill set and mindset to do anything in their future rather than a particular something. And, you know, I have this on every letter I write. I always have a quote at the end of my proposal to somebody, and it's my favorite quote from Alvin Toffler, remember Future Shock?
Sure.
Back in the early 70s, and I've had this on all my letters for years, and it said, the illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read and write, but those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn. And that's the key that we try to work with. And Jill talks about authentic learning. You know, we talk about giving students agency. It's about having the students own their space, become independent, learn how to be collaborators and team builders, you know, be able to, you know, unfetter their mind and really work really work together to create new things. My older son has written this enormous book that he's trying to get published right now.
What's it about? What?
It's about, it's a fantasy book, but he is an engineer. He's really big in the mathematics. So in this book, I'll say, because I don't want to spill the beans.
Yeah, of course.
There are things you need to do in this book, and you can't do it without math. And one point in the book, and this really sticks with me, you know, one of the characters says to the other, you know, who's living in a backward society, that, you know, your education system based, this is paraphrasing, has, you know, a lot to be, you know, desired. But one of the big fallacies in your system is, you know, in teaching math, you want to teach kids how to find the right answer every time. You're not interested in the process. You're not interested in the mistakes that lead to new revelations, because math is magical, and we've taken a giant, beautiful universe and turned it into something commonplace in the process of teaching, you know, standard education.
Yep.
And he says it much more eloquently than that, but that is a really good, description of what we're trying to do with our schools.
Yeah.
We're trying to put the magic back in education. And I think that is critical. So what is a fourth generation school? And here I want to give a shout out to a school, you know, that we are doing out of the Rhode Island studio. And, you know, there's, you know, James is doing one, our partner in Michigan down in Lower Merion. They're working on the new middle school. That is also a fourth generation.
Lower Merion,
so, yeah,
PA?
Yeah.
I'll put that into perspective for everybody. Kobe Bryant went to Lower Merion schools, the great basketball player who passed away.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Just put it right outside of Philadelphia. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a great place. But what we're talking about today on the radio is not some new highfalutin thing that people are making up. We've been talking about this for years. We've been talking about this coming revolution, which is now here. And public schools over our 15 years have really started to understand what this is, which is why Jill is working in multiple school districts around the East Coast, you know, helping teachers find a new way, especially when they're schools that we are designing that they're going to inhabit. It's, you know, we're working in Cranston, Rhode Island, you know, and
yep.
I think, you know, we've talked
yep.
in the past
yep.
about the Eaton Park
oh, yeah.
Pathfinder project, and
yeah.
that's led to
sure.
two new.
But we did an article.
Schools.
Didn't we do an article on that in the Bay?
Yep.
Am I right?
You did.
Yeah,
you did.
Sure we did. Yeah.
You did. But that success led to what is now breaking ground in an area of Cranston called Garden City, where we're building an 85,000 square foot brand new, you know, K to five elementary school. It's going to be the first completely new clean sheet elementary school in New England that really
yeah.
is
wow.
what we consider to be a fourth generation school. And hopefully people will visit it when it opens for business in September of 23. But that's the school that I think will hopefully change a lot, because in this vision, you know, fourth generation school, and this follows closely when we, you know, in the end of the end of the century and the beginning of this century, we kept talking about 21st century education, 21st century schools of the 21st century. You can organize it any way you want. And I think what we're saying here today is we can see now the future forming in front of us. And that future is really the fourth industrial revolution.
Yeah.
And how do we work in it? So just, you know, as a kind of a summary screed of this, is the fourth generation school, there's a profound paradigm shift, you know, from rote instructional or hierarchical
mm-hmm.
model of, you know, where the teacher is the
yep.
instructor and sits in the front of the room, to the network model. The teacher becomes more than an instructor. They assume the expanded role of a mentor or guide. So teachers in our schools no longer are locked into a 750 to 900 square foot classroom for most of their careers, and they don't see anybody. They only see their students. They never see their colleagues. They never have a chance to talk productively. Classrooms are reduced to 400 to 650 square feet. The corridors are removed. They're replaced with spacious, articulated learning commons, which is an agile space where kids can find spaces for presentation, research, collaboration, project-based work. Basically, the place where the teacher can go and work with a student one-on-one or one-on-five, or if there's six kids in a team, one in six. I mean, private school student-teacher ratios in public schools. And the thing is that, you know, we found in many of these schools, the learning commons have become the primary learning space, and the classrooms become the breakout spaces. That's where the teacher goes to introduce a new concept, or the students actually go into the classrooms that are now empty to work in twos and threes across the room. So the classroom is no longer an instructional space, it's a support space. And we didn't invent that. We're watching what the teachers do, and we have I've worked on over 200 schools in my career, and
I've
watched this massive change happen. And we walk into any of these schools now, and it's the same reaction every time. And here's another thing.
I got to ask something. This is interesting. What you just said, that really struck me. All right?
Mm-hmm.
You guys, I know you guys are good at this, and you take the pedagogy and you build a school around the way you want the pedagogy to work. I understand that. The learning environment changes.
Mm-hmm.
But you just said when you create – I'm just going to use – I think we were talking about Cranston right then. You create a classroom. You call it a classroom, and then it turns out it's not the classroom. All right?
Right.
So as you look at that over the course of a couple of years – all right, and you see that, wait a minute, we designed this classroom so the teacher could talk to this whole group and then they could break out, but it's not working. Well, how does that change the way you guys start looking at the schools you're going to start designing? Because as we all know, kids are kids. What works in one place is probably going to work in another, okay? So you don't want to design that big classroom anymore. In other words, as you watch what happens over the course of a few years in a school you design, what is the impact of that on the next grouping of schools? I hope I asked that question properly.
Well, yeah, I think the first thing I would say is the big takeaway from the first couple of months of Eaton Park opening up, which is just a, you know, it's a 10,000 square foot, 120
yeah.
student learning community of third, fourth, and fifth graders.
Right.
And
I love it.
And that is a school, yeah, and that and Eden Park is a school that actually, you know, is more apt to cater to kids with special needs, so that becomes a magnet school in a way. So you tend to have in these schools kids that maybe have some more attentional problems or,
mm-hmm, sure.
or emotional issues. So the learning community has attached to it a resource teacher that just works with that learning community, which was pretty cool. They have their own room. They have a multi-sensory room. And after the first 2 months of the school being open in 2019, this was like end of October, early November 2019, we all went to the school to talk with the teachers, because we always do a lot of post-occupancy studies. So we try to write papers on these things. And the resource teacher said, well, everything's going great. All the teachers are really happy. And I'll tell you another thing about that in a second. But the resource teacher said something that thunderstruck everybody in the room. She goes, well, we're not really using the multi-sensory room. And we said, oh,
yeah.
Is there something
wow.
wrong with it? She goes, no, none of the kids need it. We go, well, what do you mean? She goes, well, I've been working with these kids since they were in first grade. And they follow the you know, cohort through. So the kids that were in second grade, or this year in third grade, or fourth grade this year, they're in fifth grade. So she's followed these kids. She knows these kids. And she goes, they don't need intervention this year. I go, well, we still don't understand. She goes, the kids that had problems, like, you know, staying on task, are on task. The kids that, you know, are kind of like, you know, emotionally activated in the rooms are calm. We said, why? That's amazing. That's great. She goes, well, I know why. And we looked at pictures, and I'll send you a poster that we have now. You can stick up in
okay.
your studio if you print it up, that we
Thanks.
Just made
Thanks.
Of Eden Park. But we have these, you know, there's great architecture pictures, but there's a picture that means something more than anything. It's a bunch of kids in one of the learning studio spaces with the teacher, and the teacher's up on the whiteboard. She's really doing instruction. If you look at the room, there's six different ways kids can sit in that room. There's not one set of desks that are like the rest. They're sitting on the floor. They're standing. The girl's on a hoverboard. And one of those kids, she pointed out to us in, you know, in the picture, and said she would never sit still. So in this classroom, she doesn't have to sit still.
Exactly.
She can take five different – and the teachers have to be trained to say, that's cool. They're on
yes.
task. They're looking at me. So we're activating their bodies while they're still learning. And – the fact that they can walk around the entire learning community and be in like five or six different places, they can build their own furniture out of the Norvin Nival soft seating furniture system called Jenga blocks that we have in there. They can go on the VS
stuff.
Hockey stools and rock back and forth and get, you know, more body centering. The fact is that the kids can be kids and they still can learn. And that, instead of being automatons sitting in one kind of like cheap plastic chair that looks the same whether you're in kindergarten or in sixth grade, they have purpose-built furniture. You know, we have places they can crawl into. And she said that changes everything. And it made us realize that part of the equation in these new schools is a nod to social-emotional learning and social-emotional
right.
wellness.
There
and,
you go.
And that is another aspect of, you know, building a fourth-generation schools. You're looking at, you're not just looking at the pedagogy. You're looking at, can the kids understand the words the teacher is saying? There shouldn't be an echo in the space, you know. But there also should be a way to have lower volume sound and be absolutely clear and crisp, which is takes a lot to do. It means you have to have more in your head about the science of learning and being in order to make those kind of things work. You know, the lighting levels can be different all over the room. They don't have to be the same across the entire space. So you can have dim areas, you can have bright areas. You know, we have areas where kids can sit and make a, or stand to make a presentation or put on a little play. And across the room, without disturbing the kids that are at the other end of the room, they're doing silent research. And you can do all those things. So the school itself is, for us, it's, I mean, I've designed, as telling somebody this morning, in the 80s and the 90s, bazillions of schools around New England where, you know, the corridor and the classrooms and there's a beautiful school and looks nice, but it's not this. This is different. I wish we had a visual.
You're making the point.
So
I mean, learning is different.
You.
What we've learned, you know, actually you make the point, I have to say it this way, science marches forward. And we forget sometimes that education is a science. Okay, I have a Bachelor of Science in Education and a Master of Science in Education. Okay, education is science. And all the things that we learn from science, you start to apply exactly what you just said. And I love that. I'll just use the example of the lights in the room and the impact, just the generic impact of social-emotional learning, social-emotional ideas interacting with learning, okay, in a classroom. And to make a child feel comfortable at any level, okay, that's really what you're doing. And there's a whole movement now, Jay, towards social-emotional learning being top of mind in every school. The fact of the matter is the environment makes a difference. In a harsh, I went to Overbrook High, which was built in, I think, the year 7. Yeah, okay. And literally the year 7, okay. And, you know, it was all harsh lighting, sit-in rooms, big corridors, and window shades. All right? And that makes a difference as compared to what you're talking about now. That was the science back then of education. It's not anymore. All right? And we take all these things into consideration, and you do that. And this is so what's cool to me about what you guys do. You take all that into consideration when you build a school. And then the next schools you build, you'll keep in touch with all those people. Well, how's this working? How's it doing? Et cetera, et cetera. And the next schools we build, okay, we'll take the effects of what you did there and how the kids used it. Okay, I'll tell you, and I said it before, kids are kids. Okay, I knew dirty jokes, and I knew guys who grew up in Oregon who heard the same jokes. How'd they do that? I grew up in Philadelphia. All right, and kids are kids. Okay, yeah. And they're all going to react the same. They're all going to react the same. It's that simple. All right. So, what's the big project you're working on now?
Well, right now, the Garden City Elementary School in Cranston, that's the big one. That's the monster for us. Yeah. That's the one that's going to change the perception of what education should be and can be in Rhode Island and hopefully New England. I mean, the Rhode Island Department of Education is looking at this school very keenly because the sort of vision of what they would hope to have in education hopefully is going to be fulfilled with this school. I mean, it's really a dream of everyone to get this thing built. And like we said, it's under construction, and we're already working on the next school in Cranston that will be new, that will be bigger than this one. That'll be in a neighborhood where kids really do need this kind of service and really do need this kind of approach. So it should be open. I should say that the one thing that is very important in the Cranston projects is we're not putting schools exclusively in affluent neighborhoods. We're putting schools in highly diverse neighborhoods with wide ranges of needs because we want to be able to also show that this system works for everybody. And one
That's
thing
right.
I want to talk
That's
about
right.
quickly that was a revelation. You know, whenever you work with Jill, there's always a revelation. And
Jill,
one of them last
everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so a couple of weeks ago, she was doing the kickoff with a large cohort of teachers in Cranston. And we went out, you know, to help. We always work
of course.
With teachers. We work together. And so one of the teachers got up and she goes, "This is amazing. I came in here in this two-day, you know, workshop thinking, what the hell am I doing here? I know what I'm doing. I've been a teacher for 20 years. I realized at the end of the first day, working with a table of other teachers, I've never talked to and worked with any of these other teachers before, unless it was the only thing we ever talked about was union issues. Never talked about, you know, education theory, because there's never a venue to do it. And you just gave us a venue, and it's
Isn't
opened
that
up our head. Totally. And then
Isn't
we said,
that interesting?
That's the other big change in a fourth generation school, because the teachers now, because they don't own a classroom, they own this complex learning community. They have to work together, you know, 6, 7, 8 teachers have to work together intimately to figure out who's using what room, because the teacher doesn't have to have the same room every day. The teacher can decide they want their room on the west side instead of the east side, the learning studio. you know, they could decide that I want the stage at the far end of this learning commons because mm-hmm. I want to do a presentation with my students. So they're starting to model the behaviors we want the kids to emulate.
Yeah.
Because right now they don't. The teacher's behaviors now have to do with the 1950s, you know, third industrial revolution model of basically being a monastic instructor. And that is not what we want. We want the
opposite. Only time I remember when I was teaching, the only time, this is a long time ago, but the only time we really got together was a quote at department meetings. Okay.
Yeah.
Other than that,
oh, yeah.
The doors were shut. You know,
and
it was really,
right?
Yeah, it was siloed even within a department. I taught you, which was then junior high, now middle school.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was siloed even within a department. All right. And it's really, when you think about other professions like yours, your architectural firm, okay, mm-hmm. and all the collaboration that goes in, think of doctors who collaborate. They don't work in a vacuum. Okay, go into a hospital, you'll see they do not work in a vacuum. Okay, they work with each other. All right,
that's a new change.
Yeah, also. And what you're doing, and your design work, and I want to get back to this. When this is designed properly, okay, it really does work. And I have to say something else. It's also up to the administration. Once this design is put forth, to make sure it is used and understood on a continual basis. Okay, and actually, I'll ask you about that. Do the teachers, this is a good question, do they react themselves or do they need administrative guidance to understand this new world you're inserting them into? What are you finding on that regard?
Well, I'll say one thing for sure is to get this kind of model into a public school district, you need to have really great leadership at the top because it's that ignition cap that you need to move forward. Like when we did Eden Park, we had teachers that were no way in hell were they going to do what we were telling them about. And there's one marvelous teacher there who we know who was definitely not an early adopter by any shot. But once she got into it and realized what this was about, someone said to her, suppose we transferred you to another school that doesn't have this. She goes, I would retire. I will not go back to being alone in a classroom anymore. And that is everywhere. I think another good example, and it's another shout out, you know, we've been doing a lot of work in the Chappaqua School District in Chappaqua, New York, and at their Horace Greeley High School, which is like one of the top 10 high schools in the nation. You know, the superintendent there once said to me, you know, the only way we stay ahead is we look at the road and we see the curve coming before anyone else knows there's a curve. And we take the turn. And they have incredible leadership at that school right now that enabled us to take 40,000 square feet of space in their largest wing and completely turn it inside out and turn it into one of these fourth-generation spaces. And I think that is something we want to start to talk to the teachers about and to the head of Adam Pease, who's the head of academic, he's the curriculum director, and he's been doing amazing leadership in that space, and we can see the change in the teachers. We're actually going to be going back down there later in the fall, but we built for them we've talked on the radio before about STEAM. They instituted a STEAM curriculum through the entire school, which we got to build out, from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade, ending in a brand new edition, which we'll talk about in the future, which is just opening now. So kids get to, and this is another thing about the fourth generation, teaching kids to be flexible thinkers and problem solvers and knowing how to execute and realize something like that. Because if you're going to work in robotics, you got to know how to take things apart and put them together. And you should be learning it in school. You shouldn't have to go to college to learn this stuff.
So do the teachers, you know? And so do the administrators, and they're doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jay, what you're saying, we got to go in just a minute, but what you're saying, mm-hmm. you know, is that the learning has to match and meet the environment and vice versa. Okay, the
That's
environment
right.
has to meet and match the learning. Okay, I'll say this, but I said at the beginning, you know, I feel about you guys at Fielding. I just think you put this forward so well, and you put your money where your mouth is, so to speak. You really take the action that makes it happen. And all I can say is thank you, buddy. We got to go. What can I say? I love having you on the show. We'll do more.
Yeah, I love talking to you.
Okay. Say hello to Henry for me.
I will.
That's your grandson.
Okay.
That's your grandson. Okay.
That's my grandson. Yep.
That's your grandson. There you go. Okay. All right, Pop. I'll see you
all
later.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, pal.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Great. My good friend, now grandfather, not my grandfather, Henry's grandfather. That's Jay Littman, Fielding International, one of the partners over there, great company. We work with them a lot. We work with them a lot also in the magazine, Equity and Access, our online journal, at ace-ed.org, where we will archive this podcast and also check out our new site. You heard about the importance of SEL. It never ends. SELtoday.org. We're just putting all that together. All right. And we're archive again, ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks so much for listening. And what can I tell you? Have a great day.